I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, here we are on Talk is Jericho. It's the plot of thunder and rock and roll, and it is Friday. So that means it's time for the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. Hey, listen, today I learned if you turn over a canoe, you can wear it as a hat. Yeah, because it's capsized. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Duff brings the laughs sometimes. I don't know if I like that one or not, but it's pretty funny. But check out GunsNRoses.com for all future touring info. What a great run they had this summer. It was awesome to see Duff, even if it was from hundreds of yards away. But Fozzie's Save the World Tour was also another great run. We wrapped up our most successful tour of the States ever. But we're ready for our next run of the UK and Ireland, Northern Ireland, all those great countries there. And it's going to be another huge successful leg of the Save the World Tour. We start off on Monday, November 29th in Liverpool at the Cavern Club. Of course, the historical place where the Beatles cut their teeth. We wanted to play there for historical reasons. There's still tickets available for that. But Manchester sold out, Glasgow is sold out, Swansea is sold out, Nottingham is sold out. Only a handful of tickets left in London, Chester, Dublin. We also got Newcastle, Belfast, Birmingham, Bournemouth. Get your tickets as soon as you possibly can at FozzyRock.com, including our world-famous VIP program, one of the best in the entire business, and you do not want to miss out on that. And of course, we are getting ready for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. The triple whammy finally setting sail, only a week away, October 21st on Thursday. It's the vacation of a lifetime. If you want to go last minute, you can still go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and get those cabins. It's the only place you'll probably ever see Orange Jericho in action. Orange Cassidy, Chris Jericho teaming up to take on Ricky Starks and Will Hobbs. Kurt Angle, Will Ospreay, Rock and Roll Express, Dean Malenko, Billy Gunn, Britt Baker, Lance Archer, The Gun Club, Colt Cabana, Chris Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, Wardlow, Sean Spears, Jamie Hayter, the list goes on and on and on. Brad Williams, Medusa, Striper, Crobot, Quarantine, Fozzy, Rubik's Cube, Secret Saints, Nocturnal Affair, Paradise Kitty, Dave Spivak Project. Just get to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and book your cabin before it's too late. And also, right here, it wasn't too late to wrestle Juventud Guerrera again after almost over 20 years, a few months back on Dynamite. And Juvie makes his Talk is Jericho debut today. Talk about the match we had on Dynamite as part of the five labors of Jericho. Juvie was labor number three. You'll hear how it all came together and what it took to get Juvie to Jacksonville. He almost missed the show. He talks about what it was like being back on national TV and TV again in general after all these years. And of course, we talk about the first time we met in ECW, the matches we had in WCW and why and how it ended. He had a short run at WWF. We'll tell some stories from that. You hear where Juvie Juice came from and the story behind the Mexicools gimmick in WWE. Of course, the Filthy Animals. He talks about his friendship with Psicosis, all his great matches with Rey Mysterio, his love of lucha libre and wrestling in general. Lots of great stories with Juventud Guerrera. Juvie Juice right here on Talk is Jericho. So it was a really special night tonight. For the first time in, I think, 22 years, I got to wrestle against Juventud Guerrera. And it might have even been the first time in 22 years that I've even seen you.
Yeah, that's correct.
You know, I think.
I know. It's such a long time, Chris.
Because you worked in WWE for a while. But
I didn't see you.
I don't think I saw you. Yeah, no, I was gone maybe. Or maybe different shows or something. Or
yeah, that was so weird. I don't know. I don't know how I come. And actually, I was just 6 months in it.
Oh, right.
Like, not even that.
So it was very quick.
Yeah.
But it was interesting when we were doing this Five Labors of Jericho, when we wanted to, the original idea was to do each member of the Pinnacle.
Yeah.
Which would be Spears and then Dax and then Cash and then Wardlow and then Max. And then we thought, well, maybe we should switch it up a bit. And Max suggested Nick Gage, and I just had heard about him. So that was one. And then the other one, we're thinking, well, who could the other one be? We should try somebody that nobody has seen for a while in the
Who was to get suggested you, Cage? Who was that? Who suggested you that?
MJF.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I had just had narrated the show of Dark Side of the Ring, so I kind of heard of this guy.
Yeah.
And then, so we were trying to think who could the third one be. And we had a couple different ideas. And then suddenly, I think I said, well, Juventud might be good because I don't know why I thought about you, but it just was a perfect position because it's somebody that people knew, but we haven't seen for such a long time.
Yeah. Correct.
So that's kind of all. So what did you think when I started asking you questions about things?
Oh, well, obviously I wanted to do like a running back to a major company, right?
Right.
So I was like really looking forward to find the right moment, the right spot, in the right position. And I'm not like, it's very difficult for I guess for everyone to ask somebody for help, mm-hmm. you know, more in this business, right? Because it's like everybody's so busy. And I don't take it personally. I just think it is very difficult to do so because I'm a wrestler too.
Yeah.
So when somebody asked me that, I was in a long time ago. I was in the right position to do so because I was already just fighting with my own demons. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like Eddie says, right?
Yeah.
So, so I was like, that's why I was like, okay, well, I was just very trying to be healthy, not to get hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, in this business, it's very difficult not to be like healthy and not to get over crazy. You know, because I think. All wrestlers are crazy. As soon as you become a wrestler, you're a little bit out of your mind, right? To take so many bumps, to take so many, punishment.
Yeah.
To be on the road and all of that, leave your family and stuff like that. So, you know, I think it was the right moment. I always was like, damn, so happy when I see your success here in the AEW. And I was messaging you to tell you, you know, how happy I am or how grateful I am, I am still, you know, to be part of this rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly you told me, oh, I think there's a spot where you can
fit in. Well, I started asking you a couple questions like, hey, do you have any recent matches, like new matches or something?
Yeah,
I didn't tell you right away.
Yeah.
And I you know the business. You're probably thinking, okay, why is he asking me these questions?
Yeah.
But because I actually remember, so 2 years ago, the first time MJF and I ever did a face-to-face promo,
right?
It was in Nashville,
right?
And we were kind of going back and forth, and I needed some kind of a joke or some kind of a jab at him, right? So I couldn't think of anything, so I called Brian Gewirtz. Remember Brian Gewirtz from WWE?
Yeah.
He's one of the writers, but now he's The Rock's top producer, and he writes The Rock's like Oscar presentation speeches. So I said, Brian, do you have any jokes about MJF? And he said, well, how about, you know, when you were maybe your parents were watching me beat Juventud Guerrera and they got horny and they had sex and then you popped out. So they started chanting Hoovy.
Right.
And then just off the fly, I said, well, Google it.
Right.
And I think
you didn't plan that.
I planned the Hoovy.
Okay.
But when they were chanting his name, that's why I just said Google it. Like, you don't know, if you don't know him, Google the name.
That was so weird because you say actually didn't say Hoovy, right?
I said Hoovy to Guerrero, and they started chanting Hoovy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then MJF was like, who the hell is Hoovy? It was like meant to be. I don't know. It was like.
And then right away you started texting and then you're making challenges.
Exactly.
So we always thought, well, maybe sometime we can do something with Hoovy.
Right.
And that's why when this came up, MJF and I were writing this and we're like, what about Hoovy? Because we mentioned him 2 years ago.
Right.
So that fits.
Right.
And you and I had so many matches together, a great rivalry 20 years ago.
Right.
Nobody has seen you for a while. And I was thinking, this is perfect. People that know you will be excited. People that don't will hear about it. And that's where it all just kind of came together.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then we had to try and figure out, like, do you have a visa? And then help you legally. And all
people
that.
Don't even know what
they
we
don't
went
know.
Through.
They
I mean,
don't know.
Like, it was crazy the last couple months, right?
Yeah.
It was pretty. And then it was like, my girlfriend is like, this is like a rock story, you know? Mm. You get another chance in a major state with a major rivalry, major rivalry that you have in your career. And I haven't been like constantly like I was before, you know, like working every week to train some week. And I still training, and I like I was telling you in the locker room, I do different type of training right now, and that's kind of keep me healthy, alive, and focused. Mm. You know, I was sending you videos from the training with my boys in Mexico, but that was a big challenge, bro. I mean, like really, that was a big challenge for me to be like. Back, you know, on live TV and stuff like that.
Sure. Because I was saying to Aubrey, the referee, I said, just make sure you tell us the times. Because I said, Hoovy's done lots of live TV, but I don't know how long it's been since he has been on live TV. And it's a different situation, right?
Yeah.
But it was funny, too, because the 2 weeks before when MJF announced Nick Gage, then Nick Gage comes out on the stage. And then I was like, oh, it'd be great if we could get Hoovy to come out. But the visa wasn't ready on time. So we were trying to figure out. And some people were like, I think people really wanted to see Hoovy. Well, so
that would be great. Yeah.
But we couldn't get the visa done before this date.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that would have been like a little bit of, I don't know, everything I think is happening for a reason because my custom gear wasn't like ready. Mm. And then if I would have come at that date, they would have sent me, I would have. They would email me the custom, but I guarantee you the custom would have fit me there. You know, it would be like so weird. Instead of looking good, I would be so concerned about this is not.
Well, people haven't seen you in so long. You want to look like
exactly.
like Hoover to Guerrero,
exactly,
right?
Like with something good, right? With something real juicy.
I'm Alex Rodriguez,
and I'm Jason Kelly
from Bloomberg. This is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Let's go back to when you and I first met. Which is when I first heard of you in the States, and I think that was ECW.
Okay,
because I think Oscar. Sorry, I always say Oscar. You know who Oscar is?
Rey
it's
Mysterio.
Not a big deal. Rey Mysterio. I think Rey was in ECW first, and then you might have come in after. But then you stayed longer in ECW after he had left. Correct?
Yeah. Psychosis got hurt, so I was started having good matches with Rey, and Conan was like, "Well, who else can we bring?" So. He called me, and then I jump in, and then they liked the first match, so they brought me for two nights in a row. Remember that was at Philadelphia and New York, and that's how I met you.
Right,
I mean, like,
I remember.
But I think we met before in Japan. I think the first time we met it was in Japan with Antonio Peña with AAA for War.
Okay,
yeah, for War.
Working with WAR? Because that didn't happen until after we knew each other.
No. Yeah. I mean, that was my first time. I only worked one time with them. You already working with them
quite a few times.
So.
Okay. So we knew each other from War, which was 94, 95.
Yeah.
And then 96, I think, was ECW.
ECW, exactly. Yeah.
Because you were, and this is, it's something that I say, like, for example, like Metallica. Right. Now Metallica plays on the radio and they play in the sports arena. But when they first came out, nobody played like Metallica.
Yeah,
now so many bands do.
Yeah, yeah.
When I first saw Ray and Psicosis and then Juventud Guerrera, yeah. Nobody wrestled like you three. Maybe there was more in Mexico, but for me,
yeah.
You three guys were the first guys to really bring Lucha Libre into the States, which now so many guys do. But in 1994, 95, it was you three.
Yeah.
Is that true? Were you kind of the three pioneers?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Very blessed, very, very grateful for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you think at first when you came to ECW? What was your thought of this company and what it was like?
I think wrestling is basically, you know, it's always a challenge, right? It's always a challenge. You always want to be someone. You always want to compare yourself with someone. And I remember Antonio Peña say this. It's like, I don't know if you remember. He's like, oh, Jericho, you're the next Shawn Michaels. And you were laughing. You're like, no, sir, no.
Yeah.
And then I was telling my girlfriend about this, and it's like, I think you overcome now Shawn Michaels. I think it's great. You know how. And that's come from the question you were asking me, you know? I mean, this is like a dream come true, you know? When I was in ECW, I remember I never ride a limousine, so they picked me up.
What? They picked you up in a limousine?
In a limousine. And check this out. Sabu and Chris Benoit, ex-wife.
Nancy.
Nancy. We opened the limousine. We were like, Ray and myself, we were like, oh my God, it's awesome. We were like so happy. And then we opened the door and then we saw Sabu and Nancy. We were like more in shock, you know? It was like me and Ray here and they in front of us, like super cool. You know them. They were super cool,
yes.
Super friendly, just right out the back, just being amazing with us. And these are the people that we were watching, you know, because we used to live together, Ray and myself, along with Psicosis, at this point. My father...
You three guys lived together?
Lived together, almost for 2 years, in Mexico.
So you said your father what?
I didn't have a good relation with him. So
because he was a wrestler, too.
Yeah,
Fuerza Guerrera.
Yeah,
right?
Fuerza Guerrera. So I decided to go with them, and we were just... you know, having a blast as a teenagers, and plus with the wrestling industry, even better. I don't want to say worse, <You know? laughs> even better. But we were just watching videos from Liger, from Eddie, from Benoit, from you guys when ECW started off. So and then we're like already in the limousine with this two. Wonderful people. We were like, oh my God, you know. And you don't get me wrong. I mean, like, ECW was one of the coolest and best locker rooms ever. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a great family, you know, and everybody, you know, just were happy to be there. And every match, you know, you came after the match and everybody were just clapping and, oh, that was a great match. And it was a great atmosphere.
So what does the name, I think a lot of people always wondered, what does Juventud Guerrero is warrior,
right?
So what does Juventud mean?
Young, yeah,
like a young warrior.
Young warrior, yeah.
Ah, so because Joven,
yeah,
is young.
Yeah, exactly.
But what is Juventud like?
Joven
is young, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Juventud is like when you are. When you're a teenager, basically.
Yeah, I gotcha. Ah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a little kind of bit like older than you're not a baby, but you're kind of in that
like,
area.
Yeah, exactly.
So did you, because I remember the first time we met maybe in Japan, you spoke always pretty, I mean, you speak much better English now, but you always spoke decent English. Was that from school or was that from wrestling?
It was from rock and roll bands. It was from Trickster, Slaughter, you know, White Lion, all those bands, you know, Tesla, all those bands. I wanted to know what they say. Mm. So I really was like really looking to and see what they say. And that's how I start actually learning.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know it's funny. It's funny because everybody has their own way of learning. Like Kevin Owens is from Montreal,
right.
So he only spoke French. He learned English from watching Jim Ross and WWE.
Right.
You learned from rock and roll bands. I learned how to speak Spanish from HBO, the movie channel,
okay.
In Mexico when I lived in Mexico,
right.
And it was in English, but all the subtitles in Spanish.
Right.
So I could hear the English and read the Spanish, and that's how I learned how to speak.
Yeah.
So there's always different ways to.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
It out.
Yeah.
So when you came to ECW for a short time, and then right after that, you went to WCW. How did that happen?
Basically, same story with ECW. Psychotic got hurt, and then they call me, and then I just kind of like people doesn't realize how we didn't even know how we came through or how we make that statement. You know, we just wanted to have fun, but for a Mexican luchadors, a Mexican wrestler to break the walls of wrestling, you know, the way of wrestling is become such big guys, you know, and then start looking at these small guys, and then this small guy, they're putting together real good matches with big guys, medium guys, and then they just start, WCW start giving us match after match, and then we were just having good matches, good matches after good matches, and that was it, like the break of wrestling, I guess.
Because WCW was kind of doing what ECW did first and giving some of the luchadors a chance, some of the quote unquote smaller guys like Dean and Eddie and Chris and myself. And then WCW kind of took that concept.
Yeah,
exactly. We all went to WCW within the same six-month period, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think Ray was first, and then you were right after, and I was right after, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So was it kind of like Conan was kind of
like the Godfather, right?
The Godfather, I get to. Right,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
To bring you guys in.
Yeah.
Which is so funny because we were so fucking young. I mean, I think you were maybe 21 or 22.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was 24. 5 or 26. So here we are, just kids.
Yeah.
Like you said, wrestling, and there's so much you can do.
Yeah.
Just a little bit crazy. But we were very young at the time. How was that for you, being such a young man living in the States? Well, you were still living in Mexico, but working in the States. I mean, how was that for you?
That was something that I really wanted to I remember I used to, in Mexico, we didn't have cable. At that time, I mean, how long is this? I mean, like, we didn't even have cable. So I used to go to the, like, a video, it's called Video Center, where you see a VHC. Video store. And I saw these WCW tapes. And I was like, I was impressed with Ric Flair. And it was Great Muda coming from Japan, Sting. And I was like, I want to be there. And I put it in my head. I just want to be there. And then suddenly, like 2 years later, I was already working there. I was like, holy, wow, you know? But that was something that I think manifestation.
Yeah, man, yes.
It's real.
You made it happen, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So you put that idea into the universe, and then suddenly you have this chance.
Exactly.
Were you still traveling back and forth from Mexico to
yeah, the yeah, 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 yeah.
Every week?
Every week, yeah.
Wow.
But I remember, I mean, you remember, we used to work like 4 times a week. So that was sometimes weeks, and then pay-per-view, we were like all the house shows, all the TVs, and then the pay-per-views. And then I was like one time, like not going home for maybe 2 months.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
I can even tell you, because I just was looking at it in the book that I wrote recently. We used to do 10 days on.
Right.
Then I think it was 3 days off.
Yeah.
Then 4 days on. Then 3 days off. Then 10 days on.
Yeah.
That was our schedule every month.
Exactly. And then on top of that, in the beginning, we were still working in Mexico.
Oh.
So that was like nonstop for us, you know?
And then
WCW was like, well, you guys got to stop working in Mexico. I was like, thank you.
Do you remember when we would work in Orlando for the dude that was called WCW Worldwide? Right. But they put, I don't know how many of us there was, maybe 100 guys or 150 guys. And we would just be in Orlando for 2 weeks working at this Universal Studios.
Yeah, three shows a day. In the morning. We got to be there like 8, 9 in the morning.
I think it was 9 a.m. I think there might have been 3 or 4, but 9 a.m., 11 a.m., 1 a.m. and 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. But then we would all just go out to downtown Disney.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody. And you'd stay up all night and then you'd... I got to be at work at 8:30 and it's 6 in the morning. But do you remember just how crazy and how much fun that was? Because we were all in the same area for like 2 weeks.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was like a, you know, like a living a rockstar life.
Yeah, totally.
That was awesome.
Now, where did you stay? Because we used to stay in that Pineapple Pete's, remember that area? Yeah. Do you remember going to the disco bar, 8 tracks and all that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was awesome, man. That was really cool. Because every time they were going to the club, the fans that were there, so they were like, you know, chanting our names, just being cool with us. That was great.
We went jet skiing one time, remember that?
Yeah.
And there was another time when you and I were in a car and we passed a cop. We were speeding, so I pulled off on the side road and tried to drive through the woods to get away.
You used to drive along with Disco Inferno, right?
Yes.
We were the Mexicans, you were driving with Disco.
So you guys would always drive as the Mexicans together, right?
Yeah.
So because there was a lot of times, I remember when Dean and I would have to work, and they would put us on first because the Mexicans are late. How long do you want us to go until the Mexicans get here? And sometimes it'd be 30, 40 minutes. Well, tell us about some of those stories. Who would travel together and why were you guys always so late?
Wow, bro, yeah. I remember one time we were like really late on TV, right? And then it's like, you got to go. Like no time for nothing. Just go there. But we were still rocking the show. We were still like doing something crazy. That was unbelievable. That was one time I was so tired, and then I was like on the boxes of productions.
Before
you go.
Yeah, the road cases.
Exactly. So I was there waiting for me, and then suddenly I just fall asleep for it. Like you feel like falling asleep, and then my music came out there. Oh, you gotta go. Dun, 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 dun. I remember that time I wrestled Villano, and then we have a killer match. You know? Like, oh my God!
I remember another time somebody got hurt, and you were checking to see how the guy was. It was a Mexican guy, and your music was playing. And I remember I was like, "Hoovy, you got to go to the ring." And you were saying something, but I was like, "You can't help him. You got to go to the ring." And you were like, said something. I was like, "You got to go to the ring." And you're like, "No, he's got my boots on." You're like, I don't give a fuck how he's feeling. I need my boots to go to the ring.
I gotta get my boots.
So who did you work with quite a bit back in that time frame in WCW?
Well, obviously you, Raid, Kidman. Kidman was great,
We used to say that you and Kidman had the best of 257. You kept working over and over and over again.
Yeah.
He was a great rival for you as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know what happened with him. You know, I wish he couldn't take it like us, bro. He's not a big man.
He became part of the WWE behind the scenes as the timer for the shows and that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, that was funny because when I was there, I'd never seen him.
WWE, yeah.
Yeah.
He's very much hiding a lot, right?
Yeah.
So did you ever work with anybody that wasn't kind of like in the cruiserweight era? Did you ever work with Booker T or any of these types of guys?
I remember they tried to do a little like a rivalry with Prince Iaukea.
Yeah.
I was just watching this video and then it's like, and then he wore this really nice cape or wardrobe, and then I was like, oh, that thing is beautiful, but he sucks as a wrestler. I listened to myself just like 2 weeks ago. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe you
said that. Oh, you were saying this, yeah.
I can't believe you say that, Juvia. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, because you
were outrageous in, you know, as a commentator.
Oh, you were a comment? Do you remember? Tell us some of your favorite lines from the commentator.
Well, that was one of the favorites. And then another one when I was like, oh, he's full of juice. Lex Luger, right? And then everybody just popped in the back. That's awesome.
Where did you come up with the idea for Juicy and Too Juicy and The Juice?
Well, everything starts from Cuban too, nobody could say it.
Right.
It was like everybody would be, it sounds stupid. How do they say it?
Mm.
So somehow, some way, somebody just start calling me Hubi, like a short name of Hubi, from Cuban too, right? And then from Hubi, I think Conan was the guy, he said, Hubi juice. And then Hubi juice.
Oh, he said, give me some of that Hubi juice. Yeah, exactly. Conan, right?
Yeah. Give me some of that Hubi juice. And then from the, give me some of that Hubi juice, the juice came along.
Right.
And then The Rock was doing The Rock's name, right?
Right.
The Rock. And then it's like, oh, you got to be The Juice. And then later on, it was like, you know, the imitator.
Yeah.
Compared to him, right?
We used to laugh because you had the tights. It was supposed to say Too Juicy,
right?
But it was like J-U-I, then there was a two,
yeah,
then C-Y. So it was like Jutusi.
Yeah, exactly. I was just always trying to be juicy as hell, you know?
Whose idea was it for you to be on commentary? Because that was a funny.
That was Jim Russo, I think.
Vince Russo.
Yeah.
Because he knew you would say whatever.
Yeah. I know, right? I was like, and then I got hurt. I got hurt working with Liger for a championship, the IWGP.
In Japan?
No, in WCW.
Oh.
So I remember I did this springboard, and then I was like, oh, for sure he's going to catch me, no problem. And then I springboard and I dive like a quebrada in Acapulco, right? Open my arm, and then he literally just moved out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
So I just land like flat and my elbow pop. And then I continue the match and I finish the match and I gotta break a bottle of tequila on his head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I finished, and then I became. That was actually something really good for my career because I became the first Mexican, full Mexican
IWGP
junior.
Yeah.
Champion. I couldn't believe it. But I think I remember Ann Anderson, and he was like, oh, he didn't want to do the job. He didn't want to. He was like, and he got mad. The office got mad with Liger, and I don't think they brought him back.
Mm.
I
remember that though on commentary. One time you were watching a Liger match. You said he doesn't know how to catch anybody. He's a terrible catcher. Let's talk about something that's very interesting to me, and I know that you've spoken about it before, but I don't think we've ever really spoken about it. And this is when we had the match at Super Brawl, I think, in February of 98, where if I beat you, I get your mask. And this was the point in time when Eric Bischoff was deciding Mexicans should not have masks, and you lost yours, and remember even Ray lost his. So obviously the mask is so much a part of the Mexican culture, especially then. 25 years ago, he's even more important. So how was that pitched to you, and how did you feel about that at the time?
That was shocking. That was shocking because I when I start my career, like every wrestler, I guess that's why we feel, you don't want to lose your mask. You always want to have it, right? My dad still has it.
Mm.
So for me to lose it and to be like in this position to be losing the mask, it wasn't something that I really want to do. You know what I mean? But in a way, something was telling me, yeah, maybe you can do it. You know, maybe you I don't know. And I was just, happy to be there, and I just don't, you know, I don't, I just went with the flow, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, that was shocking. I didn't know how the people were gonna respond or how they gonna feel about me, you know, because I always, you know, try to look good and give a good look and stuff like that, but when you have a mask and you don't know how. Yeah, you're a little bit shy, you know? And it's like, when you took my mask, it was perfect. I remember it was perfect because I was trying to pull the mask little by little. We didn't have this planet. And then you just came and took it away. That was perfect. And then little by little, I started to show my face.
Because your hair, I remember you put your hair in your face.
Yeah.
Right, because you had such long hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I looked straight to the camera. And then I was like, well, this is me. And then I went into the corner, and then I pulled my hair out outside out, and then I was like, well, this is me, right? And then yeah.
So how did you feel, like, looking back on it? Did taking the mask off?
I got a question, Chris.
Sure.
Because I always was wondering, because I know that. So that was actually Eric Bischoff, but you had something to do it with you, or who was the idea to lose it with you?
No, it wasn't me at all. Oh. I had no power,
really,
no anything at that point in time. Because I remember you and I worked many, many times, and like I said, Eric had through this idea that the luchadors should lose their mask, and then you were a handsome guy, still are a handsome guy, and they, because I remember I was like, if he's going to take his mask off, I'm going to start saying that he's super ugly, and that when he takes his mask off, people are going to go, this guy's good looking.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, because I understood the Mexican culture better than anybody that wasn't actually Mexican, because I worked there.
Right.
And I remember thinking, well, if he has to lose his mask, then what can I do to kind of help this? Because I have to take, and I'm the heel and you're the baby face. So I'll just start saying he looks like Quasimodo, Quasi Juice. He's the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And that way, when you take your mask off, it's like, well, fuck, this guy's a good looking guy. And that's kind of why I was doing that.
Yeah.
But I was never really asked or consulted. It was just like we were working, and then something was like, okay, so you're going to have this mask match with Hoovy, and you're going to take his mask. And I was like, really? Yes, that's what Eric wants. And I was like, okay. So I didn't have anything to do with it.
Okay.
And listen, we're just doing what we're told.
And you know, I ask you this because I always in my head, I was like, because I remember the office always kind of like listen to you and see what was your point of view. Or you were like always like everything that they wanted to do with you was pretty much success, you know?
Yeah, well, that's cool that you notice that. But I mean, now here in AEW, obviously, as you, and even in WWE for years, as you grow up the ladder, you have a lot of influence.
Exactly.
But then I wasn't getting asked anything about, hey.
It was just more organic.
It was more organic. Like, here's what we're going to do.
Right.
We want you to do this. We think it'll be a good match and a good draw for the pay-per-view.
Right.
And so then I was like, okay, so how can I do this? So that's kind of what it was. But I was never asked, like, do you want to do this? And I certainly never went, hey, I want to take Goofy's mask. I wasn't at that level.
Right,
you know,
had I
been at that level, maybe I would have, but
yeah.
I didn't. But let me ask you a question now, that once you took it off, did that help your popularity? Were you more popular with the mask in WCW or without the mask in WCW, in your opinion?
I think a little bit of both. That was really interesting because I have now this new gimmick with the Juice without the mask. And I think really people started to like it a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, my personality without the mask, you know, the charisma and stuff like that. So I think it was, yes, a little bit better without the mask. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You know, I understood Eric's viewpoint, just like I understood Vince McMahon's viewpoint years later when I worked with Ray and I wanted to take his mask. And Vince is like, who cares about his mask? I'm like, well, it's his whole lineage and it's his whole family's legend and kids buy the mask. And he's like, nobody cares. I think guys in these states don't understand just how important the mask is. Having said that, I think Eric is thinking, here's a good looking guy. He's got good fire. He's got good facials. Why are we covering up his face with the mask?
Right.
So it's almost like, okay, now you're in, like when I went to Mexico, I never understood the Australia.
Right.
You know, you throw two guys together, they fall down, and you start rowing their legs like a rowboat, and then a guy happens to get Hurricanrana in the middle. I was like, I don't understand this, but it's Mexico.
And it works.
It works.
Yeah.
And I think that was the idea, take the mask off and let's see your face, because that's where the money lies.
Right. Exactly.
So I kind of understood his point of view about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You know? So you stayed in WCW for quite a long time, because I left in 98 and you were there all the way through with, I think it was like Filthy Animals and all these types of things. So how did you enjoy your overall time in WCW? Because you were there for probably, I don't know, 6 years?
Yeah, probably.
Did you live in Mexico the whole time you were in
WCW? By the end of, in between 99, 2000, I was living in San Diego for quite a bit, maybe for a year. because it was like difficult to start going back and forth, back and forth. So I decided to stay over in and then about that time I got married, but my wife didn't want to move to the U.S. States, yeah. So she wants to stay in Mexico. So it was a little difficult, rough for me to be deciding what to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So as you stayed in WCW for such a long time, right, how did you feel toward? Were you there in WCW when WCW ended?
I got released a little bit before.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I got released a little bit
right,
before.
Right.
I always want to. I mean, like, I think what they did with WCW and then the angle, I think they could do it so much better, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know why it didn't.
I think it's just Vince just bought it, and that was kind of it's one of those things where once the one team wins.
Right.
Because I agree, they could have built up WCW huge, but I think it was just like, we won. Because there was such a war.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in those days, right?
Right.
There really was. Yeah. And I think that was just like, once they won the war, they just wanted out.
Right, exactly. You know?
So tell us a little bit about kind of the idea. What was the Filthy Animals? That was you involved in that, right?
Yeah.
So what, tell us about that.
Well, like we were talking about, we were just like rock and roll players. So we were like every city, Miami, Atlanta, Seattle, New York, Las Vegas. We knew the clubs, you know, and the people from the club, they knew us. So they were like, you know, don't get to the VIP, go to the VIP line. So I remember in Las Vegas, that was the VIP line. It was like Mike Tyson. It was like Rodman. And then the Filthy Animals, you know? And then like, oh, it's amazing, bro. Can you imagine just a VIP line? I mean, like, you know.
You're in it.
Yeah, you're in it, right? That was tremendous.
And that was you, Kidman.
Conan.
Ray.
Obviously. I don't think Psychosis hang out with us a lot.
Nietzsche's different. He's more quiet, right?
Yeah. He's crazy, but it's a little bit odd.
Did you work a lot with Ray in WCW? Or were you guys kind of always together?
What do you mean? I mean, like
wrestle against him.
Oh, against Psychosis.
No, against Rey Mysterio.
Against each other.
Yeah.
In WCW, yeah.
Obviously. Gotcha.
All,
I didn't know if you guys were always partners or against each other.
No, we do a lot of against each other.
Did you prefer working against Rey or working against Psychosis?
Good question. I don't know. I think we have more similarity with Rey.
Mm.
But when I was working with Psychosis, I like it even better because he was my base, you know?
He's the base,
I was like looking better, right?
Yeah.
And with Rey, I was making him look better.
Yeah, you know right, I mean? right. Because you had similar styles, like you said.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I was the heel, so he got to go pretty much all the time over, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I like about AEW, not with the... Like the boxing, how you call it?
Rankings.
Rankings, exactly.
Right? Yeah, there's a number one ranking, number two ranked, or whatever it may be.
Before, like nobody ever cared about it, right? What do you think about that?
It's one of the things that we do in AEW that makes it different from WWE. And Tony Khan is very much, in English, is analytics. He studies the details.
Okay.
Analytics, yeah. So it just makes sense to have the rankings. And sometimes the rankings get a little bit like, well, who's number, whatever. But he knows who's who and where everybody is. And it just makes it different from other wrestling companies.
Yeah.
Which is very important.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. When you're like starting off and want to be different.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what we have to do. And we've done a good job of that, like bringing in Hoovy. Like if you weren't under contract in WWE, you never would be here.
Yeah.
But we do that because it keeps it fresh and keeps it exciting for everybody watching. So let's talk about your WWF experience, WWE experience. You said you're only there for like a 6-month period, but how did you end up there? Now, same thing. Psychosis got hurt.
No. Well, I got released maybe almost 2001 in WCW, and then from 2001, 2002, 2003, I got my first tryout in WWE, and people were like, why did they give you a tryout? You're already like, having a name and stuff like that. But I just want to have another shot, right? I just want to be like again on the major leagues. So I was like, okay, I guess I don't. And that's one other thing that a lot of people is like, they always, oh, Hubie is very picky. It's like, it's bitching about everything. And I don't think I was ever like that, you know? I don't think I ever was like that with you, like saying, oh, I don't want to lose with you, you know?
I don't ever remember that.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
So, but you know, internet is very bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, no, I'm not like that. I'm like, I just want to have a job. I just want to have fun.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, I did this tryout. And then I remember after the match, or the little match that I had, it was pretty good. And everybody was clapping. And then I was like, oh, yes, I think they're going to call me. They never called me. So the passing of the year. And then another year. And then it's like, oh, I was kind of like losing my hopes, right? Yeah. I was like, what the hell is happening? I don't know why, you know? It's like, but you know, WWE was like so different than WCW. I mean, I was like, I guess they never liked the small guys. And if it was one small guy, maybe it was just Ray, right?
Yeah, it was
just one spot, right? Yeah. No two or three or
four. And you can even see the way that Ray is booked.
Yeah.
It's not the priority, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So I was like, okay, well, just hold the horses. And then it's like, and then I was just trying to be in contact with them. Johnny Ace, it was like the general manager. And then I was in Japan working for Noah. Somebody, one of the companies. And then it's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to be there. And then it's like, okay, you know what? Come to the show. And then I went to the show. And then I saw Super Crazy there too. I was like, oh, do they call you too? And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, let's go. And then we have a chat again inside the arena. And then I saw Ray. Ray was got a match with Kurt Angle. And then I was like, wow, I just want to be here. And then it's like, Johnny is like, I think we're gonna call you finally. I think. And then I show him a little calendar of myself. With juicy pictures, you know. he likes that.
Yeah.
I think that make it work. I think he likes it. Like, okay, Kubi. And then I think we're gonna call you in like a month. Wait for the call. And I was like, oh yeah, right. Okay, right. Well, actually, yeah, they do. They call me, and they're like, okay, I think we're gonna offer you a contract to come to WWE, and then I went to WWE, and then. I think it was kind of like the same situation with Psychosis and Super Crazy. I think the three of us, we were like looking for a job, but everybody separately, right? So they hired us together, and then they didn't know what to do with us. If maybe just push one guy or bring this guy, how they're going to bring it, and then how we're going to kind of have the like, three guys that they... We hire, obviously we want to do something with them, but we don't know what the hell or what the fuck, right? So I remember, and then Vince is like, it was Vince, it was Chavo, it was Johnny Ace and myself. And then it's like, Hubie, we need a name for a group. I think we're going to put it together. And then it's like, he called me, and then was Vince there, and like, we want to know if you have a name for the group. And I was like, I don't know where. I say, what is cool? Okay, let's put cool. It's cool, right? So what about if we put Mexicools? And then Vince didn't understand me. And like, what? What do you say? And Johnny Ace is like, he say Mexicools. and Vince is like, popped his eyes and like, oh, I like that. I like that name. It's pretty good. And then call everybody. Oh, you got to put this name here in the screen. Oh, it's the Mexicos. And then that's how we came. And then we became the Mexicos.
You know, what's funny is you're like Stu Hart or Macho Man. You have a very, people imitate your voice. That's fucking sweet, baby. I do the drop kicks and the fucking apron fly. That's sweet.
I just saw Samoa Joe doing something like that on Twitter. Yeah.
So the Mexicools, and I remember this. You guys are coming to the ring, kind of like on a lot, like a giant lawnmower. What was the kind of the concept of the Mexicals?
I never liked it. Yeah. I always want to be juicy and try to, you know.
Right. And this now you're making like Mexican gardeners or something.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to be like pretty much like Alberto Del Rio gimmick.
Yeah.
Right? With the three of us.
Right.
So I was telling my boys, you know, let's try to be like dressed nice, came to here. And then I think, I don't know what happened. I think they took it in the wrong way. Super crazy, and then he was like, no, we don't like that. I think you overrated, Hubie. I don't think so. I'm like, come on, guys. I mean,
show
give
business.
It a try. Yeah. You know, give it a try. Let's see how it works. We don't feel like it. It's not good. I don't think maybe it's good for us. But I feel like they took it against me. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like, and I was like, damn, shit, I don't.
Because you understood the show business.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to give the Mexican people a little bit of respect. You know what I mean? I don't want to be, because they already knew about, you know, the Mexican garden and all of that. And I think for me, that was already born it. You know, mm-hmm. And then it's like, no, let's try to give something different for the audience. The name is super cool, so why we don't go for be that cool. line, right? And be cool, and then the T-shirt was also like a garden machine and whatever
lawnmower,
and I didn't like it, so I didn't really feel like it. And mm-hmm. then like, oh, you gotta put these costumes, and we tried to make it cool, right? We cut it up, we put some bandanas, we put some glasses, that was something that I never spoke about it. Am I gonna spoke it right now? And I never spoke about it because I don't like to talk bad. I never like to talk bad about people, because when you talk bad about people, in a little bit you talk bad about yourself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying too, though, because WWE was very. It's actually the wrestling business. Okay, here's some Mexican guys, so let's have them ride a lawnmower and have Mexican music that has to sound like mariachi, right?
Right.
Or, okay, let's say you're Japanese. Now you have to come to the ring and bow, and they have the bing, 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 bing. Why does it always have to be that?
Exactly.
Like, you're Mexican, you're Japanese, you're Canadian, you're American. Who gives a shit?
And
I see your point completely, because I would have been the same. Like, the Mexican gardeners, really?
Yeah.
Is this what we're doing here?
Yeah.
So I get your point on that.
Yeah.
And maybe the other guys are like, let's just keep our jobs here. You're like, but we could be so much better.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, exactly.
And is that why you had such a short run in WWE?
No. Like I said, I remember then, like, the first week, and then they give us we got the name, and then we go into TV in California.
Yeah.
And there was like a little tour in California, Mayhem, Los Angeles, some cities in California. And then I was like, that was the first time to actually, they gave me the mic.
Oh, okay.
And then we cut a promo. And I was the speaker. So we got a huge reaction. And then like a week later, Vince, I have a meeting with all the superstars. It was, you were there?
I was there.
Okay.
I know what you're going to say, but tell the story.
Okay. So he was like, oh, and then he was for about, he was releasing people, or he was for about to release people. He's like, when you go home, you're going to remember the face of these guys. When I wanted to see that face in you guys. I haven't seen this shit in a long time. I want to see these guys, the Mexican guys, how do they play in the ring and stuff like that. And we were like, holy shit, he's really saying that here in front of everyone, you know?
Yeah.
And then I remember that was just Benoit, Eddie, and you came along with us, and you were like, thumbs up, you know?
Yeah, that's not a coincidence.
Yeah.
He actually said something else too that you might have forgotten.
Yeah.
He was talking about he always says, you know, grab the brass ring, make things happen. You know, anybody can be a world champion. Man, I could see someday the Mexicools being the world champion in WWE. Three of them being the world champion. They're sharing the world championship. This is what can happen to you in WWE. And I remember thinking, the Mexicals are not going to be the world heavyweight champion. I'm like, Hoopy's going to love that. But he did say that, though.
Yeah, I was right there
when he said it.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did that lead to you guys not being there anymore then?
Well, that's what I'm thinking, what I'm saying before. Like, I never spoke about this situation.
Gotcha.
So after that, the week later, Psicosis, I was, have this incident in Australia, right?
The famous incident where we don't have to get into it, but
So
there was some legal action taken, shall we say?
Yeah, exactly. And then I was like, okay, maybe I gotta take a break. I gotta be more mature, and then
because we were crazy.
Yeah,
we were crazy because we were kids.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, be more mature. That's a good line.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm gonna be super, super mature, super just focused on my work. I wasn't doing any type of drugs, nothing, and then, but Psicosis was doing it. And nobody knew, not even myself, because I wasn't even living with him, and Super Crazy wasn't even knowing the same city. He was in TJ. Super Crazy was in 2 hours away from Mexico City in Hidalgo.
Hidalgo.
And then myself in Mexico City. So we only see each other on TV. Yeah. So we really know what it was doing. Everyone in their own city, right? But a Psicosis, he missed a plane because he missed the connection because he couldn't wake. He couldn't get up from the plane, and then they took it to the hospital.
Ah, gotcha.
And then they find out he was a WWE wrestler, and then they called the WWE, and then WWE sent some. I think it was a limousine. I remember, and then pick up Psicosis, and then it's like, I remember I was coming to the ring, like, Hoopy, Johnny, it's Hoopy, what the hell happened? I'm like, what are you talking about? And like, Psicosis missed the house show on Sunday, and they call us, and he's in the hospital because he's full of.
Yeah.
I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I was like, no way. They're like, yeah, you didn't even know. I'm like, no, I don't live with him. He lives in Tijuana. Yeah.
So you're getting blamed, though.
I got blamed, like, big time. Mm. And then it's like, and then Psicosis is like, oh, Psicosis is going to be here in 2 hours. And Vince wants you to see the three of you guys. I was like, holy shit. And that was the week before we have this
meeting.
He put us over, like, big time. And then I was, God damn it, really? No fucking way. So it was Psicosis, it was Super Crazy, and I was myself on the, and it was just yelling Vince to Psicosis, and Psicosis was just like this.
Mm.
No, even like that, he was just like this.
Looking at the ground.
And I was like apologizing for him.
Yeah.
You know? And then I was like, oh my God. What the hell is happening? Mm. You know, what the hell is happening? And because of what I was trying to do, and they took it wrong, and then, like a week later, it's true. And it, like I said, I don't like to. It was terrible.
Mm.
It was terrible, you know, because I wanted to do something for us. And then Psicosis didn't really care.
Mm-hmm.
He was just doing whatever he was doing,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't. What after that happened, he was just on his own,
mm-hmm.
doing.
Yeah, on his own.
And then he took it. I guess they took it against me.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6 months later, I have to go and get a visa in Mexico. And then they didn't give it to me.
Hmm.
That was so weird.
Hmm.
Because I was already working for WWE,
right?
I already have all these visas from WCW and all of that situation. And this is one of the things that I talk about a little bit on the upcoming documentary.
Mm-hmm.
To the that was
yeah, we did this, we worked together, yeah, documentary. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, and I never spoke about this because it's a very delicate situation,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
And I love psychosis. I love Nietzsche.
Yeah,
you know?
Your friends,
and
yeah.
everybody makes mistakes, you know. But in this moment, you know, where we really want to make it, and it still was happening something like this, it really hurts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It really hurts because I really want to go back and make a good statement, you know. So they didn't give me the visa, and then they just
wow,
yeah, and then they just let me go.
Wow,
yeah, and then I didn't have a chance to go back
because you didn't have a visa.
Yeah, because I didn't have a visa, and then and everything was so weird, Chris, like so weird.
Was it hard for you when you go from Mexico to the States and now you're in WCW and you're a big star in WCW, and then you go to WWE and you're getting these chances in WWE? Was it hard to go back to Mexico? First of all, did the fans think of you as a bigger star? And did the guys in the dressing room, were they resentful towards you?
Can guys?
The guys in the locker room. Do you understand what resentful means?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But what do you mean?
My question was when you came back to Mexico after working in the States.
Yeah, I got it.
Did the fans treat you as a bigger star?
Yeah, WWE helps a lot. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so the fans are treating you as a bigger star, but are the guys in the locker room kind of looking at you like...
Yeah, that happened.
Because
yeah.
I've seen this in Mexico, and I know the vibe there.
And then I have to go to my house, which is, I always call AAA my house because that's where I come from.
Oh, AAA, yeah.
But I came back, and I came back to CML, because my dad was working there. So
you started AAA,
God, yeah.
But then you went back to CMLL.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that happened, what you say. You know, they look at me like, and that was the old timer. That was like Bestia Salvaje, Emilio Charles, Shocker. Oh, bro, I just saw a video. I worked with him, and then I was like, you make my life difficult when I was back then. Now I'm going to make your life difficult, you know?
Right.
And then... They didn't sell nothing, Chris, like a Japanese style. Like,
and I know those guys. They didn't sell when I first started, too.
Yeah.
Bestia was terrible. The big giant nose
Yeah, exactly. So you gotta earn your spot right there, right? So
earn it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
As we start to wind down here, you mentioned a couple times that you wanted to dedicate your performance tonight to Eddie Guerrero.
Right.
What kind of an influence did Eddie have on you, and why did you want to dedicate your performance to him?
I think because he was like, I mean, my dad was my first inspiration, right?
Yeah.
Because he was a wrestler, and I grew up with him. But the first guy that I ever saw, it was like, this guy is special. This guy is something that no other Mexican is doing. What is he was doing? He was doing like, combining the Japanese style with American style, and then with the lucha style. He was strong guy,
yes.
Like a really, really effective, very technical, very, very beautiful. And then I was like, I want to be like him, you know.
Right.
I want to be like him. I want to showcase like him. And then I think I got a lot of influence from him. I like a lot. So. That's why I always kind of like...
Did he give you advice?
Yeah, obviously.
Advice that you remember?
You got to put this whole idea.
Yeah.
I mean, but no, just I had to, how to roll in a company, right? How to be professional, how to be like respectful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Chris Benoit was another guy that was like teaching us, you know, clean the locker room, you know, stuff like that, you know. And
I know that Eddie specifically, because Eddie was Mexican American, I felt that he always took great extra responsibility for all of you guys.
Yeah,
there were so many luchadors for a while that I was thinking the other day. We mentioned Psicosis and Hoovy and Ray, but then there was, you mentioned the Villanos. I remember like Lismark Jr. and like what the fuck, Lismark Jr. like. Everybody was there for a while.
Yeah.
But Eddie, I felt, kind of had a responsibility for you guys.
Yeah, big time. That's what I miss about him. And he wanted always to be as family, you know, together, even in WWE, right? It's like, you guys got to be strong, got to be together, help each other. but that didn't happen, unfortunately, with the Mexicos specifically.
Right. Because they had the LWO for a short period of time.
Yeah, exactly.
And the ECW and all that sort of thing. So now in Mexico, and once again, it was great to have you here tonight. And I noticed now, because once again, we don't have to get too far into it, but working in AEW is now allowing you to work in many other places in the States. And you have appearances in Las Vegas and all these other places. So is the idea to start working more in the States now? Because I know pre-pandemic, this whole last year has been just a wash for everybody, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I've always been like very constantly booking in the U.S. Obviously, now that they saw me here, obviously they
it's gonna be huge. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They're gonna already they're calling me for more
dates
and stuff, nice. And stuff like that. But yeah, I'm happy. I'm grateful, and that's why I try to keep myself, you know, in the gym and busy and all of that. And the people they don't understand is. It's very difficult to continue at this point, like yourself and myself, and be performing at this point. But I think we did a pretty good work together tonight. You know, I think about people doesn't even know how difficult it is. Like even like I was telling you, I missed the flight last night, so I gotta stay in a different city, wake up only sleep maybe 6 hours and then
go
direct to the airport.
That's the shit.
And then
that's
the shit. And then it's like, this is your biggest match, your comeback for years. And then it's like, it's stressful. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, people don't even know what the hell we're going through.
That's right.
And so, when I was last night, I was like, well, there's nothing you can do now.
Right.
You know, just relax, do your best. And then it's like, okay, and then rock and roll, you know? And then, like I said, you were like, oh, this is going to be more like a fight. And then we were going to the match. This is not a fight. This is a fucking lucha.
It was great. It was great, too, last night when you missed your flight. I was talking to one of the office guys, to Chris Harrington. And he's like, yeah, we got him on this flight, and it's going to get him in at 3:30. I'm like, 3:30? I said, we got to get an earlier flight. He said, well, he's on standby. I was like, that. I went on my own phone. I was sitting right in this chair, and I looked up the airlines. I was like, look, this flight gets them in at 1:00. Let's book this one. Well, I'll check. I said, I'll buy it myself. I'll pay for it.
Right.
I didn't have to, but I was like, just book him on the flight.
Right.
He doesn't want to get here at 3:30.
Exactly. Which,
and I don't want him to get here at
3:30. Yes, exactly.
You know, it's been 21 years, and I know this guy, but like, give him a break, man, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
People only do that, right?
Yeah.
What did you think when you got to AEW? And obviously, you're kind of... You're a vet, but you're the new guy because there's not a lot of. Did you know some of the people here? Was everyone cool to you? How was it to come to AEW tonight?
That was great. That was actually great. I was like the way I picture, because, you know, being in this business for three generations, obviously I know the three generation ago, like Kazarian, BC, like, you know,
Chris
like,
Daniels, who you recognize halfway through.
I was like, he looks like a guy, is a manager, is like in WWE. I was like, is he here? The ball guy, he was in NWA, remember?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I was like, no, I don't think it's here. And then I look, oh, that's Christopher Daniels. Oh, my God. I can't believe it. And then, so many guys that obviously Malenko and all the
Chavo.
Chavo.
But there's a lot of guys, though, that were saying they're very excited, like Sammy Guevara.
Yeah.
Angelico.
Yeah, exactly.
Phoenix. And I don't know if you, I'm sure you know Phoenix and Pentagon.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
they
yeah.
were like, oh, who's coming? This is so exciting.
Yeah.
Because what we don't realize is that there are it's so fucked up to even think this because I still think I'm 18 years old. There are guys in this company who grew up watching our matches.
Exactly.
And now we're here and it's like, I really was so excited to see your match.
I'm like a fan, right?
Because 20 years ago I loved your match. I'm like, well, I hope you enjoyed it 20 years later, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's also, I'm not sure if I mentioned this or not. That's why we were talking about your music. And some people are suggesting using your old WCW, you know, Mexican music, and I was like, I don't want that. I don't want this to be a trip to the past.
Right.
I want this to be, yes, they had a rivalry 21 years ago, and here we are 20 years later, and they still don't like each other, and that's why MGF brought him in. So when you're using your new music, to me that shows this is the updated version to wrestle the updated version of Jericho.
Exactly.
You know, because when somebody suggested, well, why don't we use Hoovy's WCW? I said, then why don't you use my WCW music too then? Why don't I come out in tights from 1998? Like, that's not what we're selling here. And I don't think we did that. It's like we took the rivalry to the modern era.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So
we'll go back to your question. Yeah, I mean, I just feel great. I feel like grateful and just want to say thank you, Chris, like here in front of you. Thank you very much for this opportunity, because I feel like they really give us the respect that perhaps we deserve, you know, in a way, you know, and, you know, I have to go and get like, that was not like, first I got to go all this paperwork to get the visa, right? The first visa, the visa. And then that was a lot of paperwork, interview with the immigration lawyers. And
you had to fly across the country.
But I think it was important because, you know, if you have a company as strong as AEW, even when it's new, it's already strong, backing you up to have a visa, I was like, why don't I don't get a visa myself, or like a tourist visa? And like, no, this is like a business visa. And a tourist visa, and I was like, okay, yeah, it's true. So they actually did a pretty good job. They sent me all these documents, they translated, and all of that. They put a lot of effort, and then they put I gotta go and get my fingerprints to Hermosillo, which is like almost the same long as Tijuana. I gotta go back one day, and then I gotta go another for another day to get the final interview with the consul, and then we were like, oh, hopefully he get it, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There was no, and once again, so people listening, there was no guarantee that Hoovy would be here tonight.
Yeah,
and this was not an idea that came up 2 weeks ago. We've been working on this for months.
Exactly.
And you just got your visa on Monday, right?
Exactly, on Monday.
On Monday, on Wednesday. And this
because
is after,
you want me to bring it like the Wednesday before.
Yes, this is after months of working on it. So this is not easy just to get a visa to be on Dynamite.
And then I flew the day before, and then the custom took 3 hours. So I got to stay over, and then I got to rush today.
And you know what's so funny is that last night I got here at about 10 o'clock and I saw Pentagon in the hallway.
Yeah.
He was going to the venue because he was late too, because he was also held up in Houston. But he was on an earlier Houston flight but missed his connection. Right. And then the next flight, and then you were on the next flight. And it's like these Houston Mexicos.
Yeah.
You got to come earlier.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Maybe the day before. Exactly.
Last question for you, man. This has been great talking to you. Of all the matches you've had, is there one that stands out to you as your favorite match, the best match that you've ever had over the last 25 years of your career?
Oh, that's a very difficult question. Yeah. I mean, like, there's a special match, but I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know, obviously the match that I have with you with the because meaning, because the rivalry that we have, when I lost the mask.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I have a lot of with Ray, but there were like maybe quite a few that I don't remember one in particular, you know what I mean? I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. And then in WWE, like I have really good matches on the house shows where they were like not telling you what to do. Yeah. So I was always having fun in performance the way I want to and on the house shows. But when I was on TV, it was
very short.
Very short. No, like very restricted. And I didn't feel comfortable myself too. So I don't remember. So I think the more memorable one was when I loved.
You know, it's funny. So Lance Storm, he had a wrestling school for a long time, and now he does. If you send him your match, he'll analyze your match.
Okay.
He'll give you a review, and he'll make notes of what you did right and what you did wrong.
Okay.
So just a couple months ago, I said, well, let's do that with me. Pretend you don't know me, and let's do one of my matches, and not one of the first ones and not one of the latest ones. So I picked you and I from the Super Brawl mass match.
Okay.
So Lance gave his review of all the notes of things that he thought we did right and things we thought we did wrong. But it was cool to watch. I hadn't seen that match in a long time, and watching it back, it's a great match. It really is, all the way across the board, all the way through. But I hadn't seen it since probably that night that we did it. And that, I always say, if you said to me, what's your best match in WCW? That one always comes to mind instantly. The mass match with Hoovy. That's one of the ones. So, and a memorable one is tonight as well. A great seeing you again.
Yes,
and,
I know.
And working with you again, man. And it's been awesome talking to you. So
thank you. I just want to say thank you to Tony Cannon and Cody Rhodes and all the people, you know, the Young Bucks. I know they're part of, you know, the team. And all you know, the migration team, Mega.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah, the travel guy, Chris
Harrington, Charlie was involved.
Yeah, exactly.
Charlie Ramone.
Charlie. All, I mean, thank you. I'm really, really thankful, grateful. And I hope this is not the last time. I hope we can have another opportunity to be here. I'm really happy. This is the place to be. Is something really unique. It's something outstanding. Something, how do they treat the people like you and me and the legends and the new guy? How do they put all this together, you know, the main event tonight with Cody and
Malachi.
Black. Yeah,
and
exactly.
Fuck, yeah.
You know, how do they, now they do it in this angle with Chavo helping Andrade and the Lucha Brothers. All this is unique, you know. I think I can fit perfectly, and hopefully they give me a good opportunity and a good chance. I will do my best.
It was a great start tonight.
Thank you, my friend.
Good seeing you, my man.
My man. Love you, Chris.
Love you too, buddy.